two young fathers are shot to death outside an iconic Utah restaurant.
I said, your dad has been hurt really bad.
The grief was disorienting for those left behind, until one choice changed everything.
I just remember writing this letter, and it wasn't me writing it.
Can a personal decision shape generations?
We're all falling for this guy's trick.
I'm Amy Donaldson. Season 2 of The Letter, Ripple Effect, is available now. Follow us at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Why, hello there. It's your old pal, Sarah Silverman, and I'm back with a brand new season of the Sarah Silverman Podcast. On my podcast, I am talking about everything. Politics? Yeah, we get into it. Favorite sandwich shop in L.A.? I know a few spots, and I'm going to tell you about them. I'm also going to be talking to you. I will be reacting and responding to listener voicemails in real time. Let me tell you, things can get weird, and I love every second of it. Weird is my comfort zone. The newest season of the Sarah Silverman Podcast is out now wherever you get your podcasts.
Lemonada.
Welcome to In the Bubble. This is Andy Slavitt. Welcome to our new co-host. We have a great toolkit episode today, and it is about how to do the school thing. And it is a toolkit with your questions and voicemails, and I think you're going to like it a lot because the guests are phenomenal. Janice Jackson is the chief executive officer of the Chicago Public Schools. Dr. Jackson's been immersed in the Chicago Public Schools for her entire life, from being a student through Head Start through 12th grade. She's been a teacher, she's been a principal, chief education officer, and now she's a CEO and a mom to two students. She is very amazing and inspiring. The second person who will be taking questions from you is the former Secretary of Education, John King, who is the president and CEO of the Education Trust. Before that, he was the Secretary of Education under President Obama, and he was the New York State Education Commissioner. Really passionate guy with a wonderful personal story. I think you'll enjoy this toolkit episode. I will warn you that this conversation goes into a lot of depth, so I end up being able to ask only about 4 or 5 questions, and I tried to summarize the best questions because I think, as you'll see, the depth as to why and how these decisions were getting made ended up being just as interesting as the what. So I apologize if we don't give you as many tools as we like to, but that's how the conversation steered, and I think it is fascinating anyway. I'm going to cut to the chase, and let's get to Janice and John. Hey, guys, how are you?
Hello, how are you?
Hi, good morning.
You know, people are confused. They're hyped up. They're nervous. They're, you know, they know what to do. They know this is not a perfect situation that they're dealing with. But now they're really facing it. They're dealing with the questions. And I think, you know, this podcast in general is about our life during this time and how to get through it. And I like to say it's 50% Winston Churchill, 50% Fred Rogers. So how do we help people come together with a little bit of a unifying voice with some calm and but to be helpful? And so appreciate you guys being on today, because people do come for the help. And today they're quite fortunate to have two great educational leaders in this country. I just went through their backgrounds. Before we get into the questions, I'm wondering if there's some overall thoughts, and maybe we'll start with you, Janice, that you would offer students, parents, teachers, about how you think about the coming year and how you, what the mindset you want folks to have.
Just like everything with COVID, that evolves every day. But there are a few things that I think are critically important and remain true throughout this process, which is, first, all school districts. I know I talk to my colleagues all the time. We are focused on making sure that we give our kids the best experience possible. That is critically important. That is our work on a normal day, but it's even more important as we try to respond to this global pandemic. I think the message that the school district is here for you to parents is important. I, you know, like many parents, had to work through remote learning this past spring. So I know firsthand what some of those challenges are. And I think the plans that me and my colleagues across the country have put together really takes that into consideration. The school year starting in Chicago will be all remote. And I know many districts across the country are doing that. And I know for many people, myself included, that was a hard pill to swallow. I'm an old school traditionalist when it comes to like education. And so thinking about a new structure is sometimes hard for people to get past. But one of the things that I would say to the adults is that children are much more resilient than we give them credit for. They're actually more adaptive and flexible than we are. And that's something to keep top of mind, not to take for granted, but to keep top of mind. But I want people to know that we have a plan, that we are going to provide support, and that, you know, we're all in this together and we have an opportunity to really make this work.
So, John, what overall philosophical thoughts do you have?
Whether folks are going all distance or at best hybrid in some places where the rate of infection is much lower, we're relying on the internet. And we all should be in a panic about the fact that we have these huge disparities in internet access. And so every community should be organizing to make sure that every kid has access to the internet and access to a device. I know Janice has focused on this in Chicago, but you know, we have evidence that from a Pew study that 79% of white families have reliable internet access, 66% of Black families, 61% of Latino families. It's just unacceptable. The last thing I'd say is that school has a huge, obviously important academic role in kids' lives, but there's also the socio-emotional role that school plays. And I worry a lot about kids who aren't in school buildings. And that may have been the only place where they had consistent, reliable, nurturing relationships. I was a kid like that. My parents passed, my mom when I was 8, my dad when I was 12. The thing that saved me was consistent relationships at school. And so I fear for the kids who have been disconnected from that for months and now will be disconnected from that going into the school year. So we've got to center relationships, making sure that there are adults in touch with every kid, communicating with them, making sure they feel seen and heard. And we can't lose sight of that socio-emotional role that school plays.
Oh, absolutely. I'm going to jump into some questions. And let's just recognize up front that as I've read these questions, there are no perfect answers. And I don't expect you guys to have perfect answers to these questions. But I think people would love some help in how to think them through. So with that, let me start with Daniel from the Bronx. He says, from my own experience, I was able to see that my older children, 9th grade, 8th grade, and 4th grade, were able to transition relatively well to virtual learning as their education methods didn't seem to be interrupted. For example, the teacher could ask them to read on Zoom or to answer a question on Zoom, etc. However, for my youngest child in kindergarten, it was very difficult as the school philosophy is much more of a play-based approach. How do you keep those younger children involved? And maybe, Janice, if you don't mind, we'll start with you.
No, that's a great question and a fair question. As we put together our plan for remote learning, we spent a fair amount of time making sure that the guidance was appropriate from a few different perspectives, most notably age appropriate. And I think what I would say first is acknowledging the fact that parents will play a larger role in the education of their children in a remote setting. There's no way to get around that. For our younger students, though, we have to make sure that there are opportunities for them to engage directly with their teachers. I mean, it may look like what we've seen with older students engaging through Zoom or Google Classroom, et cetera. But we also have to provide parents with a lot of guidance around how to keep them actively engaged throughout the day. And so I do worry about, you know, disparities that may exist in families where you have a parent who, you know, can focus solely on their child's academic and social emotional development. And many of our students, to John's point earlier, whose parents are the very essential workers that we have been lifting up. They can't be in two places at one time. And so when we look at our plan, when it is safe to return students to school, we are prioritizing our youngest students, our students with disabilities, because we know that they need the direct support of the school system. And our early childhood educators have talked a lot about this as well. how do we get the benefits of early childhood education, not just the academic benefits. There are a lot of social benefits of early childhood education, and trying to mimic that in a virtual environment presents some challenges, but we are working through it. And I feel like we're learning a lot.
John, anything you'd add?
Yeah, just I'd sort of double down on Janice's point about the role of parents. You know, the San Antonio School District is planning to do a whole parent training as the first part of the reopening of school. I think that's critical because parents are really co-teachers in this current moment. And so supporting them around how to support their kids' learning, I think, is critical. You know, I'd also come back to this idea that school is more than the academics. You know, little kids need time to play. They need time to be physically active. And we have to support parents around thinking about how to structure a day for their kids where that's possible. And then on Janice's equity point, you know, only about 1 in 5 Black folks in the workforce can work from home. Only about 1 in 6 Latinos in the workforce can work from home. So we have a lot of kids who are with older siblings, or maybe they're with another family member. We are going to see, I think, without question, gaps grow because of those kinds of disparities. So when we think about physical reopening, we ought to prioritize the youngest students and our students with disabilities. I just think we have to accept that Zoom is not going to get it done for our youngest learners.
Yeah, no, that's right. And when we come to talk about the equity and disparity issues, you know, it's interesting how money and privilege allows you to buy yourself so many more options that others don't have. And so I hope that people who are listening to this understand that given that situation, we have to prioritize the people who don't have their own built-in options.
Andy, if I can even build on that point, we've all talked about the inequities inherent in the educational system and so many systems throughout this country. But here we are building a new system, remote learning. Let us avoid the sins of the past. We cannot create a new system that replicates the inequities that exist in our current system, which is why John's point around access to internet, high speed internet, which is very different than tethering to a phone and some of the other stuff that a lot of families had to do in the spring. So we prioritize through our Chicago Connected program, getting families access to high speed internet so that they can fully participate. When we distributed devices, we prioritized the students that were in the most need. And so it has been really a call to action for us to lead around the words and the things that we espouse on a daily basis around equity. But the charge that I've been really giving everybody is we are in the process of creating a system. Let us create a fair and equitable system. But I do worry about some of the things that you said. You know, I'm seeing parents who are creating these pods. They're hiring sometimes the very teachers who are supposed to be teaching in these schools, but they're hiring people to do things for their kids in that gap that already has existed and persisted over time. I'm just afraid of what that's going to look like over time. And I feel like, you know, that's a place where we have to spend much more time discussing. That's a place where the district has to spend more time filling in the gap or standing in the gap around that. But it is something that I worry about when I start to think about what is the impact 5 years from now, 10 years from now. I think we should all work extremely hard not to reproduce the same system, not to reproduce the status quo.
Important to remind people that the kids we're worrying about that don't have internet today didn't have internet last year and the year before and the year before. Now we know it. So what are we going to do about it? And I just hope people are conscious in this moment of not just themselves, but everyone around them. I think that's the theme of both, not just this podcast, but I think that's should be the theme of this pandemic. Let me just say another quick question here. Let me start with you, John. This is from a teacher. She says, her name is Sarah. She didn't give her last name. What kind of training are you planning to give teachers for best practices for online teaching learning? It is very different than in person. As a teacher, I know I have received none. She says, I do report back next week, so maybe something will happen in the interim, but I'm very, very doubtful.
I mean, Sarah's exactly right. And I am really worried about where we are on this. And this points again to a failure on the part of the federal government. And it's a failure at multiple levels. One, the United States Education Department should be a hub of best practices. It isn't. They're invisible. They've been invisible throughout this crisis. So that's a failure. Two, professional development requires resources. And we know that some affluent districts were able to spend a lot more on professional development for their teachers around distance learning than districts that are serving a lot of low-income students. The way we solve that is with federal resources. But despite the urgent need across lots of areas, education, healthcare, unemployment insurance, so forth, Congress has failed to do their job. The Senate really has failed to do its job. And we still don't have an additional stimulus bill that will direct resources to school districts. We think school districts need at least $175 billion just to avoid cuts. And then you start thinking about the money that's needed for professional development, for internet access, for addressing student socio-emotional needs with additional counselors and mental health services, et cetera. So the one hopeful thing is that I think school district superintendents are really worried about making sure teachers have good professional development. And, you know, Janice, you talked about what they're doing in Chicago, but I talk to superintendents all over the country who are trying now to think about how do we make sure that before we start this school year, we make distance learning much better than it was in the spring.
Let me flip the question a little bit for you, Janice, and ask it this way. If a teacher is in a district that is not offering training, is there advice you would offer them? Are there places to go? Are there resources? We'll certainly can look for some and put them up in our show notes, but I'm wondering if you have any counsel.
Well, first of all, teachers are very resourceful by nature. And so the person who posed the question, I'm sure, is spending a great deal of time looking at websites. There are, you know, plenty of resources that a lot of these organizations are producing. But that's not the right approach. I mean, going back to the point that I made earlier, we're continuously reproducing the same inequities that exist in a system where a teacher is spending more time looking for resources than they are preparing their lessons and preparing to teach in a new and diverse way. Couple things I would say. First, I want to double down on John's point and really talk about what this looks like on the ground level. And CPS has responded to this, but I think that most districts, especially in some of our rural areas who don't have access to groups like Council of Great City Schools, Chiefs for Change, and other groups that have come together where we can share best practices quickly and get up to speed, I worry about what's happening in thousands of school districts across the country that don't have the connections, the networks, and the resources. What we have done is we were already in the process of creating an online curriculum for pre-K through 12. We're releasing some of the materials in beta form just so that teachers have something. Once again, so that the focus is on the pedagogy in this new space and not the what. So I would say that that's the focus. This is a message for superintendents more so than teachers, is that you have to provide people with constant training. You got to triage. So we got in there in the spring quickly to respond because people were thrown into the deep. But you also have to create a comprehensive plan so that this is addressed not just during the crisis, but long term. Teachers have been complaining about professional development for decades. And I think we have an opportunity to really leverage the technology that's out there so that we can level the playing field. That has not happened at the national level. And so what that looks like at the ground level is people are scrambling. And the end result is that there are disparate outcomes. You have some systems that have full professional development training and resources for teachers, and many more who don't. And again, that impacts the quality of education that children have, which is, you know, a concern for me.
Don't go anywhere. We've got to go earn some money to donate to charity.
Hi there, it's Julia Louis-Dreyfus. You may know me from my podcast called Wiser Than Me, where I talk to older women and get their wisdom from the front lines of life. After season one aired, I was amazed by how many people told me our show made them look forward to getting older, which is why I'm here to talk about season two of the show. Sally Field, Billie Jean King, Beverly Johnson, Ina Garten, Bonnie Raitt, just to name a few. And of course, my 90-year-old mom, Judy. All hail old women. Wiser Than Me Season 2 is out now from Lemonada Media.
Can't get enough of your favorite Lemonada Media podcasts? By subscribing to Lemonada Premium today, you'll gain access to fun and inspiring bonus content from all of our podcasts across the Lemonada Media Network. As a subscriber, you can listen to never-before-heard interview excerpts, behind-the-scenes segments, and continue to uncover new ways to make life suck less through all of our exclusive subscriber audio. Check out a free trial of Lemonada Premium today in the Apple Podcast app by clicking on our podcast logo and then the subscribe button.
I've got a question from Aaron. He says, going fully remote will disproportionately affect kids who already have a difficult home life. What additional resources, mental health, food assistance, case management, housing support, are being allocated to support your most at-risk youth? So maybe think about that from a Chicago perspective. And I've got a number of questions about kids' mental health. And so if you have any specific thoughts you want to dive deep into that area, that would be great, Janice. We'll start with you.
Definitely. First, let me start with what we have done and will continue to do is making sure that we're doing the things and providing the services that we're uniquely positioned to do. That includes feeding students. We served over 16 million meals during the past, the last 3 months of the school year. And, you know, we saw record numbers of people coming out for food who were in situations where they were food insecure. And it really went beyond kind of what, you know, the people who were traditionally partaking in a program like that, which again speaks to, I guess, the level of despair in this crisis. So we'll continue to do that because the need is there. We surveyed our parents, our students, our teachers, et cetera, after our first remote learning implementation this spring. And mental health was at the top of the list. So what we've done now is we've created a plan for students to access those clinicians and related health service providers in our schools. It took us a while to get that off the ground, and I think a lot of districts struggled with that as well. We are a district that is focused on social emotional learning. So ensuring that those classes and that space is built into the schedule is something that we spent a lot of time on this year. And then also working with our community-based partners and organizations who really had to stop connecting with kids because their point of connection is in the school, and figuring out how to do that. We couldn't get a lot of our telehealth services off the ground because of the internet divide. So there were a lot of things to contend with. But as we go into the fall, I think we've solved for that in many ways. Number one, with increased staffing, which was a commitment that was made prior to this and we had to accelerate. But then also the internet connectivity issue, which we keep coming back to. And to your point, the crisis really forced us to provide ubiquitous access, but it's something we're committed to do long term. Our Chicago Connected program is a 4-year program, and we are hoping that in 4 years, the federal government gets to a place where they see this as a utility that everybody deserves and should have. That's our bet. But luckily, the city and our philanthropic partners invested in our kids. And so we will be able to provide ubiquitous access for the next 4 years.
That's fantastic. That's great. John, I want to ask you, I want to dive a little bit deep into this area. You know, you are, and I don't know if you would be are comfortable with me characterizing this, but you're a survivor of some childhood trauma yourself. And childhood trauma is one of the hidden killers in our society when it's undealt with. You had, as you described, thankfully, some people in your lives who helped you through that. But I'm wondering if you have any thoughts on how we help parents, adults, loved ones, check in on, talk to kids as they go through what could be a experience that becomes a trauma that they deal with for a long, long time.
Yeah, it's so important. You know, after my mom passed, it's October of fourth grade, and I live with my dad. My dad was very sick with undiagnosed Alzheimer's. So home was this environment that was scary, inconsistent, lonely. I didn't know what he was going to be like from one night to the next, and I didn't know why. And the thing that that made all the difference was I had this amazing teacher, fourth, fifth, sixth grade, Mr. Osterweil. I'm still in touch with him. Just phenomenal teacher who made his classroom this place where I could be a kid when I couldn't be a kid at home. And we have to think about how do we create that kind of stability for kids in a really challenging distance learning context. The Phoenix Union School District in Arizona had a campaign last spring. They called every student every day just to check on them, to say, how are you doing? What do you need? To figure out if they needed food, if they needed academic support, if they needed a hotspot, or if they needed mental health support, right? And so that commitment to making sure kids are heard and checked in with, I think, is huge. Two, you're so right about the need to identify these things early and provide support. And I so admire the work that Janice is doing. And we need the federal government to give school districts more help on this front. We've got states where the ratio of students to counselors is like 600 to 1. How is a counselor going to be an effective source of support with a caseload of 600 students? And so we need more counselors. We need more mental health service providers. And in the context of an economic crisis that is hitting state and local government hard, we need the federal government to step in with those resources. And so far, they haven't been willing to do that.
Yeah. But John, if you're an adult and you've got kids in your life, whether they're your own children, nieces, nephews, neighbor kids, how do you recommend checking in with them and asking how they're doing and making sure that they have a place to go? I mean, if you're an adult, is there a responsibility you can take to help stem some of this damage?
I mean, I think it's you got to check in with kids and you got to be in conversation with them. You got to listen. And, you know, I have two teenage daughters, 14 and 16. Sometimes the adolescents got to ask the questions. You gotta be persistent about the questions. You may not get an answer the first time, and you gotta make sure, create a space where you can have that conversation. Sometimes it can be just, you know, reading a book with the kid, sharing a story, you know, just making that connection. But I think kids desperately, desperately need that connection. And one of my fears about this COVID-19 period for kids and adults is that it's causing people to feel so isolated and alone. And we've really got to break through that.
That's right. Janice?
I would just build on that and say, you know, in some cases, it's not even as important to ask. You just have to act. We know, so going back to the conversation about the pods earlier or other opportunities that families may be creating for their own children, like think about who else you can bring into that space, whether those are family members or people from your churches, people in your neighborhood, if you live in a place where there's that kind of outreach. That's something that I've struggled with. You know, I think that in addition to the we're all in this together, there's also been kind of this theme of like, I have to take care of my own. Like, you know, school isn't open. I got to make sure my house is in order. I need to keep my job. I have to organize my students. And I would just encourage people to think about, you know, who is within your kind of sphere of influence that you can support. There's a lot of power in doing that. And I think going back to that earlier theme, if we don't want to create another inequitable system, like it's going to require all of us to step in.
All right. I got to drill down there because I think that's such an important point. One of the tragedies of this moment, in addition to all the other tragedies, is the missed opportunity to ask people what they can do to help and contribute. The people in this country have not been asked to sacrifice. They've not been asked to help. They've not been asked to be part of the solution. And so it leaves people to their natural inclination to wonder, if I'm not being supported, how do I get that support? But what you're saying is so important is that I really think that there's so many people who want to know how they can contribute, and they're not being asked to do it. And we all have to be part of this. So I think what you're calling on people to do is to say, if you got the energy to get through the day and get past your own basic needs, there's no greater time to look into what you can do to help others. And by the way, there is no better feeling. The selfish part of that is there's no better thing for your mental health than helping other people, because all of a sudden the microscope of your own problem disappears. Anyway, I'm sorry to get on my soapbox.
No, I think it's an important point.
And now for something we like to call advertising.
Hi, I'm June Diane Raphael.
And I'm Jessica St. Clair.
And each week, we are sitting down to talk all about life's twists, turns, and absurdities on The Deep Dive.
From exploring the depths of TikTok, which is our only news source, to navigating the complexities of grief and loss, we are just two best friends behind a mic processing life together.
This podcast is all about finding the silver linings in the madness. So get ready for unfiltered conversations about motherhood, careers, pop culture, and everything in between.
Here at The Deep Dive, we're all about community. We believe in the power of sharing experiences and the strength that comes from supporting one another. And we would love to have you with us.
So be sure to join us every Wednesday on The Deep Dive from Lemonada Media, wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to The Dough, where cash is queen and we hardly know her, but we're still here figuring her out together because, y'all, season 2 is here. Hosted every week by me, X Maya. Remember me? I'm going to be talking to all types of people about their relationship to money. I'm talking to reality stars, entrepreneurs, financial experts, and even some of my own friends. Basically, anyone who will get real with me about their dollars, how they make money, how they spend it, and how they save it, because I'm trying to retire early, people. Season 2 of The Dough is out now, wherever you get your podcasts.
I think there's a few questions that have come in about how will you know and how will you make this the decision to bring people back from remote learning to in-person learning? Are there thresholds that need to exist? Are there specific elements like testing, community spread, otherwise? What are the things that you look for to start to move people back in? And if you had to speculate, what in your mind do you expect that to be a serious option?
So we have stated that we would be all remote for the first quarter, obviously to give ourselves an opportunity to look at any kind of trends around community spread, positivity rates, et cetera. I think the first thing that I would say, like this entire process, it is driven by the science. And I can't really stress how important that is as a leader. It was personally hard for me to make a decision for kids not to be in class in person. And I think that if we did not pay attention to science, it would be very easy to make a mistake and to put people's lives in jeopardy. We conducted community engagement. Our parents were clear. Some people were ready. A lot of people were not. And we had to listen to that. I think as we look forward, we need to see that the spread is controlled. We need a national plan around this. And I know John's going to weigh in on that. Because even if Chicago or New York or other places are in good shape, if people are traveling across the United States, which we all do, there's still a possibility of spread that we should be concerned about. Our local health official, Dr. Arwady, is fantastic. And she takes a look at all of these issues and helps us to make the right decision so that our students and staff are safe. So I don't have a hard and fast number. I think it looks like control. It looks like, continued expansion of testing, more rapid testing and results for everybody. And it also looks like the public trusting the process and trusting what's going on. And that is a place where we still have a long way to go nationally because of the lack of a strategy at the top, but also locally. I mean, people are still afraid and we can't do what we need to do in the school building, which is educate students, if we can't meet that basic need of people feeling safe. And so we'll continue to monitor this and make the best decision with the data that's there. But the one thing that I have committed to is embracing the uncertainty. And I know that sounds crazy. That sounds crazy coming out of my mouth, but that's the space that we live in. There is a lot of uncertainty and we have to embrace that so that we make the right decisions. It's not good enough to just do what we've always done because these circumstances are so different.
Yeah. And John, like I think about this and clearly, you know, you've driven home the message about the federal government. That's not hard to miss. But the thing that is like I try to remind people of, it's like you got people who are like, we must open up schools on time. And then they're going out to bars and socializing without a mask. So, you know, it's like if you want the school to open, which we all do, guess who has an influence on that? We all do.
You're exactly right. I mean, we've chosen bars and restaurants over schools. So we need that local commitment. We need leadership at the local government level, at the state level, at the federal level. What we see now is places around the country opening up, even though their positivity rate is much higher than the CDC has suggested. We see schools and higher ed institutions opening up, even though the rate of new cases is skyrocketing up rather than going down, as the CDC has suggested. And that's only compounding our problem. So when places make bad decisions, that increases the risk for everybody, not just in their own community, but as Janice pointed out, it increases the risk for people all over the country because no one's really in a bubble. Everyone's interacting with each other. So we need a national reset on doing the things that the science recommends. And at the same time, we have to, I think, shift how we think about school reopening and say schools are reopening virtually, hybrid, maybe in person in some places, but schools are reopening. And the question is, how do we make sure that we take care of our kids so we get them the best academic experience and socio-emotional experience we can?
Janice, I want to ask you to reflect. I got to tell you, talking to you, I feel like you were built for this moment.
Oh, my goodness.
Dr. Jackson, I feel like the people, well, look, I mean, we all know what it's like to have the wrong person in the job at the most important moments.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to harp on that. I want to harp on having the right people mm-hmm. in the job that we need them in the right moments. And for millions of people, you know, your job is as important a job as any job we're gonna have. And I see you. How are you doing it? How are you embracing it? How are you feeling? And how can we help you, General? Because I think you're the general.
Thank you for that. And I hope I don't break down in the middle of this. But, you know, it's one of those things for people who know me. They know that I am built strong, you know, and especially African-American women, we're expected to be strong and shoulder and carry everything. It's just naturally who we are. This moment is the most stressful thing. And I've experienced a lot of stuff, a lot of trauma in my life as well, but nothing compares to this. And when Michelle Obama said the other day that she was experiencing low-grade depression, I just said, thank you. I mean, yes. For the most powerful woman, I mean, she's our queen. So for her to say and acknowledge that, that to me spoke volumes. And I say that because it's okay not to be okay in this space, and people need to know that. And even
Absolutely.
During my roughest times, and if you follow Chicago schools and politics, you know that times get really tough around here. You know, even when I'm ready to check out, the next day I just get back up and I want to do this. There is something in me. And I know that this time is unique, and that if you don't have people at the table who care, people at the table who are fearless, and people at the table who will stand up despite all of the craziness and still work on behalf of children, the children who may not have the same support and people with the access to speak out for them, that's my why. And so for the people who are in key decision making positions across this country, I just tell them, you have to stay focused. You have to stand in the gap. This is the time that we've all planned for and talked about. And I'm just looking forward to the end and reflecting back and being proud that we all survived this. But my community and my city needs me. And so even when I feel, you know, despair, I know that the work is bigger than me, and I've been put in this position to do that. So thank you for acknowledging that, because it means a lot. It's lonely sometimes in these positions,
yeah, I'm sure
so
it is.
That's important.
Well, Dr. Jackson, thank you so much for joining us. Good luck. We are lucky to have you. I can assure people listening in, this virus will not beat the strong people in our country. Like you, Dr. Jackson, like you, Secretary King, whose voice is, and experience is an inspiration, and it's something we all need to pay attention to. It's the moment for all of us. I mean, whether you're running a school district or you're running a family or whatever you're doing, this is a moment of opportunity for us. And you're making me want to, both of you are making me want to embrace it.
Good. All right.
Thanks for doing this show and for calling attention to these issues and trying to help people make it through this.
Absolutely.
You got it.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks. Good to see you, Janice.
Good to see you, too.
All right. Well, I hope that conversation was helpful. If it wasn't helpful, I think it was at least very interesting to hear how they thought. And I think Wednesday's episode is going to be very similar because it's with comedian Mike Birbiglia. No, it's going to be very different. You know, we try to mix it up a little bit. Mike Birbiglia, for those of you who don't know him, is not just one of the funniest people on the planet, but he also is someone who can talk about someone whose job is literally to tour in front of live audiences, and now he is stuck like the rest of us. And he's got, we want to hear his takes on that. And then we're back to toolkits. We've got next Monday, we got a very interesting toolkit, popular demand. That's how we are able to help and deal with the issues that are emerging, the long-term chronic issues that are emerging from COVID. We've got two amazing experts. And then we have the following week, even another toolkit. You guys have so many tools in your tool belt, you don't know what to do with them. And that is going to be one on testing, because I think new testing is hopefully coming to prime time soon enough, and we're going to have people who've been inventing some of the new types of tests. So we'll talk to you on Wednesday. Thank you so much. Over and out. Thanks for listening to In the Bubble. Hope you rate us highly. We're a production of Lemonada Media. Chrissy Pease is our producer. Ivan Kuriev is our editor. Jessica Cordova Kramer and Stephanie Whittleswax executive produce the show and run our lives. Our theme was composed by Dan Malad and Oliver Hill, with additional music by Ivan Kuriev. You can find out more about our show on social media at Lemonada Media, and you can find me at A Slavitt on Twitter or at Andy Slavitt on Instagram. If you liked what you heard today, please tell your friends to come listen, but tell them at a distance. And for now, stay safe, share some joy, and we will get through this together. And hashtag stay home.
Do you ever get hit with a cringy memory of your 13-year-old self out of nowhere, and suddenly you're panic sweating and laughing at the same time? Don't worry. We all get that. It's because being an adolescent is one of the most visceral shared experiences we have as people, and we want to talk about it. Join me, Penn Badgley, and my two friends, Nava and Sophie, on Podcrushed as we interview celebrity guests about the joys and horrors of being a teenager and how those moments made them who they are today. New episodes of Podcrushed are out on April 24th, wherever you get your podcasts.
Last Day from Lemonada Media explores the moments that change us. Those times where you look back and say, whoa, one day I was myself and the next I wasn't. I'm Stephanie Whittleswax, and I have seen time and time again how sharing these stories can change lives. So, do you have a moment in your life that changed you fundamentally and forever? What happened? How did you move through it? And how did you eventually start again? If you'd like to share your story, go to bit.ly/lastdaystories, bit.ly/lastdaystories. We can't wait to hear from you.